And we welcome you to the Money Talk program. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Don Sower, delighted to be sharing this time with you. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about issues that, well, some of our listeners have pointed out to me that they care about or they'd like more information about. We do this typically as part of our ongoing programming under the Get Back to Basics mantra, but it really does really originate in the Money Talk mailbag. Here at the station, you know, on our website, if you Google, you know, the Money Talk program, you know, here in Rhode Island, you know, you can get in there and actually ask questions, and we do get plenty of them, and some people will go so far as just to come up to you in public if they do recognize us and give us questions or ideas for shows that they would like to, things they'd like to hear about, things they'd like to learn about, or maybe just something like explained a little bit more. So on today's show, that's what we're going to focus some attention on, some of the more interesting topics, some of the more interesting questions that I've heard. And what I'm trying to do also is focus on those issues that we're hearing more and more about. So it's not just one person's question, but it's the same topic. Perhaps the wording of the question is a little bit different, but the meaning is the same. And we're going to focus on those things. Now, one of the things that has come up quite a bit lately, and is because people are paying attention, is the world of investing in gold. There's lots of different ways to do it, and let's face it, it has been a pretty impressive quarter, this first quarter of 2016, in the world of gold. Probably one of the biggest quarterly gains we've seen in about 30 years. So gold's futures did settle higher during the course of this week, scoring the best quarterly performance we've seen since 1986, and that was, just to give you context, that was the year that Top Gun was the most popular movie with Tom Cruise. Well, bullion has benefited as the Federal Reserve's dovish stance on policy has softened the high-flying U.S. dollar. When the dollar weakens, when it comes down a bit, the value of things priced in dollars, like commodities, including gold, the price will go up. It takes more weak U.S. dollars to purchase a bushel of corn, a barrel of oil, by the way, and an ounce of gold or silver. So we've seen a pretty good year. I mean, June gold that is traded in the futures contracts gained about $7 to settle at around $1,235. Prices for the most active contracts traded on the COMEX, or the commodities exchanges, saw a monthly gain of perhaps less than 0.1%, the smallest of the year, but gold did in fact jump 16.4% in the first 3 months of 2016. That's its strongest quarterly showing since the third quarter of 1986, according to FactSet. Now, a lot of this information that I'm sharing with you as part of this topic comes from MSN Money's Market Watch, just in case you're curious. And they have great analysts over there and great people writing on these topics, including Myra Sifong from Market Watch and Rachel Corning Beals. And we'll give credit where credit's due. They're doing the research. We want to share the credit to them for helping us come up with accurate information, we hope. Now, gold's early year rally began to lose some of its momentum as March wore on, primarily due to some profit-taking, of course. When gold runs up 16% in a matter of a few months, there are going to be people out there who think, oh, it can't continue at this pace, so let's take some of our money and run. And a very large accumulation of short positions, people who are taking short positions, gambling that the market will go down, large accumulation of short positions by the large commercial segment of the paper gold trade on the COMEX, as I mentioned, that may be a part of that volatility. That massive commercial short position, by the way, which is a wager, a gamble that prices will fall, is currently the primary impediment for the gold market, why it isn't running much higher than it actually is, according to a number of experts on this topic. Commercial traders use futures to actually hedge prices against risk, the risk that's tied to the businesses that they're actually in. If past form holds true, some of the big entities, the largest entities in the commercial category, will hit the market pretty hard with sell orders to drive the price down. They're going to try to create a self-fulfilling prophecy. And when the price goes down, they will collect on those short positions they have. You see, they go in, borrow the shares of a gold ETF, for example, an exchange-traded fund, and they sell immediately in the open market at the current price. And now they have a lot of cash sitting in their money market account, which is where they hold their cash. Then if they're right and the value of gold and, of course, the subsequent gold shares that go with them, ETFs, when those values go down, then remember, they don't owe cash to the brokerage that they borrowed from. They owe the shares of the exchange-traded fund. So now when the price has come down considerably, let's say even of 10 or 15%, then they can go into the open market and buy the ETF shares at a lower price, give the shares back to the company they borrowed from, and whatever's left in the money market, the difference between what they started with and now the position at a lower price, that's their profit. Now, admittedly, the people involved in the business, there's something called short interest. Somebody's getting paid, so the person engaging in the strategy is going to have to pay some interest. So, you know, the difference is going to be reduced by the interest payment amount, but hopefully if they're right, then the interest will be small by comparison to the profit they've enjoyed. But looking further out into the year ahead, away from these short-term traders we might consider, Michael Armbruster, who's the principal and co-founder of AltaVest, believes that gold is likely to benefit from some key tailwinds that exist out there uniquely here in 2016. Those tailwinds include central banks moving to negative interest rates and investors looking to diversify into alternative investments due to heightened U.S. political uncertainty. Do you think they're talking about our presidential elections? And they also concede that some people feel they've been getting mixed messages related to our nation's monetary policy from the Federal Reserve. At least that's Armbruster's opinion. Just this week, Fed Chairwoman Janet Yellen reemphasized the likelihood for only a modest upward adjustment to U.S. interest rates this year, a reaction that remains dependent on, of course, signs of sustainable rising inflation. It's the data that will determine what the Fed does, but the chair says we're not as inclined to think right now that there will be a great many increases this year. Maybe one, could be two, but not the four that they were originally talking about. Not likely. Now, Yellen's comments sent the dollar lower, and as the dollar went down, non-yielding gold tends to move in the opposite direction of the dollar. It goes higher. Economic data will offer clues on the Fed's next move. So this is kind of why you hear the debate literally on a daily basis as some piece of economic data comes across the desk, and everybody on cable television and radio and on the web is talking about, well, what could this economic data point mean to the Federal Reserve and their plans at the next meeting, and what are they going to do, and how's it going to affect the interest yields, and how's that going to affect, of course, the cost of gold and silver and other commodities, including oil. They're all part and parcel to it. So, I mean, as with all things, there are people who will make money in the markets as the assets that they purchase go higher in value, and there are people who are determined to make money in markets even if the price goes down. As from the world of short investors, I just illustrated that there are some people who do. They try to, anticipate what direction gold and other commodities may go in and take appropriate trade positions, maybe selling short in those positions or buying into a short position. Or they will go the opposite direction. If they think the market's going to move higher, then they may take a long position. And in some cases, they try to create the environment through speaking on national television if they're given the opportunity. I mean, how many times do you think I've seen a person come on there and say, oh, the world is coming to an end, and this is awful, and this is a terrible place to be, and blah, blah, blah. And by the way to make money in this environment is to do the following, including buy my newsletter, right? How many times have you heard something like that? They always have seemingly an ulterior motive. So I listen with a very skewed ear. Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program. I'm Don Soa. Thanks for tuning in. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. And welcome back to the Money Talk program, everybody. I'm Don Soa. Delighted to have you here with me. Talking a little bit about some things that have been happening lately in the world. This first quarter, pretty much coming to an end now, starting out a brand new quarter. Hopefully, the month of April will bring, I think a April showers, literally. I don't know whether it'll be showers or not. Hopefully, we'll be looking at a relatively good market. And some of the historical data, and I've heard some of it mentioned today on the various news media, historical data tends to support a relatively decent month of April in most of the equity indexes. You should be warned that as much as we love to go back and look at the statistics and say, oh, well, April is always a good month for the stock market. Well, even if the years that they focus like as a snapshot, you know, like cherry pick certain years, certain time periods, yeah, you can pretty much find almost any type of informational analogy or informational basic concept, depending upon how you cherry-pick the time frame. So you've got to be very, very careful. And as we are always concerned that you realize, and I'm sure you do by now, the regulators are also really pushing on the idea that past performance doesn't dictate what future performance will be. It certainly doesn't guarantee what future performance will be. But historians also tell you that if we do not study the past, especially mistakes from the past, we're doomed to make those mistakes again. So, again, history is important. Numerical history related to market performance is important. Understanding what makes things work and why and when, it is important. But be careful when you build your planning and make sure that ultimately you look at yourself in the mirror when you start investing your hard-earned dollars. Who am I, you should ask? What is my time frame? What is my goal? How much risk am I willing to take as an investor? If you're not asking those questions, I hope your advisor is. If you're working with a professional, and I hope you are, I hope that they're asking those kinds of questions. And if you're listening to this program, maybe we're helping you to formulate the questions that you need to be asking of your advisor. Keep your advisor informed. Let them know who you are. Make sure that they are making extremely well-informed decisions on your behalf. It's one of the reasons that on Financial Talk programs, we, on this show, which we have always touted for 25 years as not being an infomercial. We're very, very careful not to sell anything here. That's not the point. You're going to be forced or be given the opportunity to make financial decisions moving forward, very important ones, some that may secure that independent retirement you're hoping for, that education for your kids, lots of important goals. Now, the more time you have to get there, obviously, the better off you'll be. The more time you have to get there, the less risk and volatility you have to accept as an investor now, because you get time on your hand. Time's extremely important. The shorter the time frame, then the more risk you might be inclined to take because you need a higher rate of return, and that can be really dangerous. You can't predict when the good years and bad years of a market cycle will occur. The fact that they have occurred in cycles before doesn't mean you'll enjoy the exact cycle you're hoping for. Be so careful. Again, your financial advisor will probably be aware of all the things I just mentioned, your time frame, your risk profile, the goals you have. That's really cool and important stuff. Here on this show, I can offer you some sort of generic ideas and thoughts. I can certainly help you to figure out which questions to ask, what things to look at, what preparation you should make. But because, hey, listen, I'm sitting here and, you know, looking at a microphone ultimately, you know, I can't know all the things about you that I need to know, especially with the number of listeners we have here, to be able to give you that specific piece of information that you're really desperate to have. You know, that magic formula, that magic piece of software that will get you to the Emerald City. It doesn't work that way. Now, as I mentioned, the Federal Reserve, which is responsible for trying to manage our country's, nations, and economies' monetary policy, you know, it looks for a lot of different things, and right now it's looking for a lot of data, a lot of indicators to say, well, what direction is this economy going, and what adjustments should we as a responsible central bank, which is what the Fed is supposed to be, you know, what things do we need to be looking at to determine the direction of our monetary policy? Economic data will offer some clues, and as the data improves and gets stronger, it's more likely that the Federal Reserve will adjust its interest rates, its Fed fund rate. Data this past week showed that the U.S. weekly jobless claims rose to the highest level in 2 months. Chicago's business barometer for March did edge higher. The report is due out on, you know, during the course of this quarter end period. In the meantime, chief executive officer over at Gold Money, a guy named Roy Sebag, he told Market Watch which is the people from whom this article is gleaned, that gold prices have been climbing strongly, not just in the United States and U.S. dollars, but in other currencies as well. Though it's been only about 3 months, gold is now up between 13 and perhaps 23% in the world's major currencies, depending upon which one you're looking at, of course, making one of the strongest movements in gold since it was demonetized back in 1971. Year-to-date, gold priced in euros is up about 18% for the year, which is, of course, for the quarter. And in the Mexican peso, it has climbed roughly 23%. Now, technically, the metal has started its own version of a new bull market in the U.S. dollar and is now catching up to the bull market, which was started nearly 2 years ago. In other metals trading, for example, May silver. Silver gained about 25.3 cents, or 1.7%, and is trading right around $15.46 an ounce, with prices up about 12% for the quarter. So silver has been going up quite a bit. Gold is going up more. But again, gold and silver both being precious metals, but they are, in terms of their use, whether it's in industry, whether it's in jewelry and ornamentation, or whether it's as a currency derivative. Again, right now, the gold to silver ratio seems to favor silver, according to some experts. But, you know, people are always asking about gold and silver. Now, copper fell less than a cent for the May price to about $2.18 a pound, but saw a quarterly gain of about 2%, and July platinum rose $11.30 to $977.50 an ounce. Now, that's up about 9% for the quarter. Palladium, not as aggressive, but it fell a bit, about $2.35. It's around $564 an ounce, ending around 0.4% higher, though, for the quarter. Now, you've heard people talk about ways to purchase precious metals. And even on this show, I've told people when they ask about, and this goes back to the Money Talk mailbag, if I'm going to buy gold, should I buy coins or bars? Or is there some other safer, more reasonable way to buy it? The word safe is the problem. I'm reluctant to talk about precious metals and use the word safe in the same sentence, despite all of the extraordinary commercials that you hear on radio and television. Hey, some of the national commercials play it on my own radio show. I sit back in my chair and just cringe. Yeah, well, again, just as we say at the beginning of any one of these shows, that the comments offered here publicly by the hosts of the Money Talk program or our guests are those of the host and the guest and do not necessarily reflect that of Cumulus Radio or any of the staff. Hey, they may not even, as bizarre as this may sound, reflect the opinion of our producer, Brett, although he tends to nod a lot and say, yeah, I agree, that sounds cool. But, I mean, ultimately, everybody is saying, hey, look, you know, listen closely to what these people on the air have to say, but understand whatever they do say is their opinion. My problem, too, is that when commercials are run during the show, I've had people come up to me in the public and say, geez, do you personally endorse this particular, commercial that was on your show? If they're running a commercial on your show, you must endorse that commercial lender's opinion on some subject. I said, well, no, as a matter of fact, a lot of the commercials I don't necessarily endorse, or I may disagree firmly, but it's not my place, I guess, to comment publicly on them. But if you do ask, I will tell you how I feel. Gold is problematic. Silver is problematic. People like it because it's sexy. It's a yellow, gold, silver, beautiful, shiny metal. It's interesting that way. People, you know, will describe it lots of different ways. I use the word sexy. That's not necessarily an inappropriate word. They do assign an intrinsic value to it. You've got to keep it in proper context. They do assign a value. And, you know, with that assignment, you know, you have to question what they're really thinking. A lot of investment professionals do not like gold as part of an investment portfolio, as part of an allocation. The argument in favor of it would be that it doesn't correlate to the stock market directly. It doesn't. People who like it say, yes, it's a wonderful and has proven in history anyway to be a fairly efficient hedge against inflation, perhaps a hedge against risks or fears that are out there that we can't control. And there's plenty of them, I guess. Because they assign an intrinsic value to the gold or silver, they say that, well, money will flow into those, what they view as safe haven types of investments. When you hear about some catastrophe overseas, some terrorist event, or any number of things, it's not unusual to see the stock market go down. Stock market goes down because people don't feel good. Remember, the decision to buy anything, whether it's a car or a house or stocks or anything, oftentimes is heavily influenced by how you feel. You may have a logical decision about what you want to buy and when you want to buy it and the fact that you want to buy it at all. So you may be thinking about what you want to do, thinking about an investment. But in the end, before you put money on the table, you think about it, but you express a feeling about it. A great many investments are made based on how people feel. When they hear something terrible has happened, or something as simple as bad weather when you look out the window when you get up in the morning, people will, it's not that they will cancel their decision to do something, like buy that car today, but they defer it to another time when they feel better about it. The rain doesn't affect the price of the car necessarily. It does affect the timing of when some people might buy it. You know, the market is the same way. The stock market is the same way. People make decisions based on how they feel. And you know something? That's okay. That's perfectly fine. But as with all things, buying gold, especially, or silver, through an exchange-traded fund, which is an investment fund that trades like a stock. Now, there's a whole unique set of risks attached to these instruments, folks. Please be aware. Please ask your financial advisor about them, whether it's right for you. Investors who don't like gold don't like it because they don't pay a dividend. They are unyielding, was a phrase that I heard the other day. Yeah, so they would intend to invest in them. But admittedly, they don't correlate directly to the stock market, so I get it. The spider gold, which is the symbol GLD, interestingly enough, you know, quarterly gain, about 16%. Not too shabby, but take a look at 2015 and 14, and you'll understand why we still say, be careful. Gold has risk, and it can be volatile. This is Don Sower. This is Money Talk. I'll be right back. And we welcome you back to today's Money Talk program. I'm Don Sower, delighted to have you traveling with us today. And we know a great many people listen to the program in their cars, and we welcome you. Please just drive safely. It's very interesting, as I'm mentioning, that today's program, we're focusing on a lot of the questions that come out of our Money Talk mailbag. Over many years, we've gotten a great many questions. I'm trying to focus on the ones that people are asking since the beginning of this year, 2016. People say, people are always looking for some opportunity, something, some way to beat the system, some way to do better than the average. It's like that active mutual fund manager who wants to outperform the index. They say that, 70% of them can't beat the index. Well, that means, that's sort of that glass is half full kind of thing. That means that 30% of active managers do, in fact, potentially beat the index. So wouldn't you just want to figure out a way to focus on finding those really good, high-quality, consistent outperformers? I guess you would. I guess that's what makes them special. And, of course, we all love special. But there are a lot of things out there, and we will focus on occasion on this program, on the gimmicks, on the things that sound too good to be true, and on things that actually are a little confusing. There's a lot of financial products in the world today. They're not illegal, but the regulators don't like them, not because they should be illegal, but because they're very, very complicated. The ability of the average individual, average consumer, to be able to look at the information they're getting about a financial strategy or a financial product, to be able to look at that information, to listen to that explanation and understand how it works, understand what level of risk is there, get a pretty solid understanding of whether there is an opportunity for them there. But very importantly, understand the risk that comes with it. A great many products today are very complicated. They're very sophisticated. And not everybody, including some very, very smart people, are capable of understanding how these financial products work. Well, there's a product now. It's been around for a long time. This is nothing new, but out of the Money Talk mailbag, somebody said, you know, I've been looking at a number of stocks. A friend of mine buys what they call penny stocks, stocks that are priced under $10 per share. You know, they're cheap. Well, Ben Franklin, he offered a very famous adage, and it was, a penny saved is a penny earned. And that still rings true today. If you can manage to invest those pennies, those earnings, well, you've just compounded a wise decision upon a wise decision. Good idea. Of course, there are endless pitfalls that one can make when investing. We talk about them here. We assist you in hopefully garnering enough information to ask good questions and make good decisions. Ironically, one of the most dangerous traps investors fall prey to is in this one category, what seems kind of innocuous or simple, and that's the penny stock, an extremely inexpensive stock whose chief allure is its very low price. And that sometimes tricks investors into thinking they're getting a really great deal. Now, again, please understand, there's no issue, no strategy, no product that's entirely bad for everyone. And not all products that fall under the same moniker, in this case, penny stock, not all of them are bad. I'm not suggesting that they're designed to be evil or they're designed to take unfair advantage of you. But there are issues that you need to understand. It sounds too easy. I've seen commercial ads. I've seen things online where they talk about penny stocks without any explanation. And what do they show? They show the young man in front of his convertible Ferrari and a Gulfstream jet behind him with a beautiful young lady on his arm. Well, this is supposed to be an image. They're selling an image of success and wealth to you. And this is what comes to you if you're successful. And one way to get there is through the use of these wonderful financial strategies. Let the buyer beware. The article I was looking at that dealt with this issue was offered by a writer named John Devine. He's with the U.S. News and World Report. You know, I could get out here and explain a lot of things to you. I can explain them in my own language. I could tell stories from my own experiences. But sometimes, since I'm an avid reader like some of you might be, I read an article. I say, that's the best explanation I've heard. So let's share it with our listeners. And certainly just make sure that we give the U.S. News and World Report and Mr. Devine credit for, especially when he's dealing with statistics. The numbers matter. Reality is very different than some of the things you think about when you're dealing with some of these products. Investing hard-earned money in seemingly dirt-cheap penny stocks can and could send that investor to the poorhouse, not to purchase that Gulfstream jet. There are some reasons why penny stocks, for most of our listeners, most of you listening to this, there are a lot of reasons why they should be left alone. One of them is you can get in, but how quickly and how easily can you get out? Robert Johnson is president and CEO of the American College of Financial Services. He touches on a few defining characteristics of penny stocks that you have to be aware of. Typically, they're small market cap companies. So they're small companies. They're very small, with very high volatility and not a great deal of liquidity, meaning there's not a lot of shares trading at any given time. But just because a stock has a small market cap and tends to be volatile doesn't mean that the deck is stacked necessarily against the investor. Liquidity, however, is a big deal, and it's a bigger deal than some people think. The lack of liquidity is what many penny stock investors find to be most frustrating. Getting in and getting out quickly and getting out, selling the stock you may already own and not forcing the price down yourself. Imagine that there's so little trading volume in a particular stock that if you want to sell 50,000 shares of it, that your order to sell is going to force the price down. You'll watch it drop while you're sitting there if you're on the computer. Essentially, well, investors often find that the market is extremely thin for penny stocks and that they must take a price reduction to find a willing buyer. And that price reduction can be like a cascade. If it's an open market where you say sell at the market, the first few buys you get may not be somebody buying 50,000 shares. They may say, oh, we'll buy 10,000 at a little bit lower price. And if you've got an open market trade, guess what? It's going to go through. Unless you set some sort of parameters in place to protect your price, you know, it could get ugly really fast. Limits. You put limits on these trades. like I said, there's lots of other issues that you deal with penny stocks. But the other thing is, and you know, this is not always true, and I don't want to say this is true in every case, but there are scam artists out there who frequently use penny stocks for some of these get-rich-quick schemes. You see the shows on television and the movies, right? You know, Leonardo DiCaprio, does it ring a bell? Ever get an email talking about the next penny stock that will make you millions? Has the Prince of Nigeria recently asked for a short-term loan, promising 10% of his family's fortune in return? Believe me, you get these weird things. I see them myself. You think these people could figure out that I'm a financial professional, but they still send it out. David Twibble, who's president of the Englewood, Colorado-based Custom Portfolio Group, says that penny stocks are chock full of modern financial hucksters or con artists. The penny stock market, though not everyone, but the market itself is heavily manipulated and exists primarily to separate perhaps unsuspecting investors from their hard-earned money. That's according to David Twibble. Scammers abound and internet message boards are rife with hot tips. They plant a lot of these messages to make you I'm excited about this opportunity. I made a lot of money in this opportunity. You've heard it all. This is a big deal. This is adverse, negative, interstate, international commerce in some cases. Lots of hot tips out there and recommendations designed to lure investors into thinking they found the next Netflix or Microsoft or Amazon or something. In reality, many of these companies are in financial trouble or have pie-in-the-sky business plans, not realistic, without any meaningful revenue or earnings. If it's not that bad, if it's not a scam, at very least, there's a lack of transparency, and that's one of the things that makes me nervous. If any strategy is not transparent, we need more of that. The sort of opacity, another term, that Twibble cites above simply isn't found in mainstream stocks. Developments in companies represented in, the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the S&P 500, for instance, those things are meticulously documented in very prominent financial media outlets everywhere. It's what we call the efficient market rule. The efficient market rule means there's a lot of news. There's a lot of analytical information out there. And it's all free, folks. Go online. You don't have to get crazy. A lot of financial websites out there. Click on the symbol you're looking at. Look at the number of articles that are on that topic. Look at the technical data listed on that financial website. I mean, I'm not promoting any one particular website, but any major financial engine has all that data. Plug in the simple quote, put the quote box, plug in the symbol. You're going to get pages after pages of data. You can even go to an analyst's page where they'll tell you how many analysts are tracking that company regularly and whether they have buys, sells, or holds on them. In some cases, even why. I mean, there's a lot of information out there, and that's called the efficient market thing. That's why they say it's hard to beat an index generally, especially in the blue chip stocks. But penny stocks are part of what would obviously be an inefficient market, and that there's not a lot of information there. Now, the people who are promoting the penny stocks may suggest to you that that's what makes them, you know, great opportunities for you. Not everybody's looking at them. There's an opportunity to grab up something that hasn't quite gotten the public's attention yet, although there's the implied assumption that the public will eventually figure it out, and you will have gotten in at the very, very, very low price, and it will run up extensively, and then you can get out and make a killing. Wow. But as with all things, these online forums, you got to be careful. Penny stocks generally trade in the wild, wild west of the over-the-counter marketplace, which means that their reporting requirements tend to be minimal. According to Charles Sizemore, who's an investor on what they call Covestor, C-O-V-E-S-T-O-R, chief investment officer of Sizemore Capital Management, he's an RIA, registered investment advisor, in Dallas. It can be exceptionally hard to find reliable information about these particular companies. That's the whole issue. Folks, we're talking about penny stocks. People are asking about them. We're seeing ads about them everywhere. Should you be thinking of buying them? We've got more reasons why you need to be careful right here on Money Talk. I'll be right back. I'm Don Sowa. And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa. You know, in the last segment, I was beating up an awful lot on penny stocks. And, you know, I do, in fact, know people that you know, and to have they enjoy trading in penny stocks. And actually, yes, a few of them have made a little bit of money here and there. I can't deny that. They can actually be fun to trade. Even guys like the commentators like Sizemore and others have said, you know, yeah, they can be fun, but that's just it. You know, when you trade penny stocks, you should do so with play money. And what I mean by play money is money you can afford to lose, money that will not affect your retirement nest egg. It's recreational trading. I'm okay with that. Not the sort of investing you do that can change your life. The allegation that all penny stocks are worthless investments isn't always true. That's the whole point. But every now and then, some obscure pink sheet player will, you know, rip off a face-melting rally and, you know, earn early investor some epic returns. It does happen, but please, don't be fooled by it. The chance of, put it this way, it's like I've heard some people say, you know, it's always somebody else that does it. You want to make a lot of money as an investor? Find out, I had one guy tell me, he said, just ask me what I'm investing in right now and buy something completely different. Or find out what I'm selling today and buy it. You do that, you'll make a lot of money, because what the point that he's making is that he always gets it wrong. Either he's doing the wrong thing with the wrong type of investment, the wrong shares, or he's timing it in an ugly way. So don't be fooled. The odds are not really in your favor when you're dealing with a lot of these penny stocks, high volatility. You know, everyone remembers the grandma who won the $10 million jackpot playing the slot machine. You hear these stories. But no one recalls the 100,000 players who lost $100 apiece to pay her out. You know, no news articles are written about the next 100,000 gamblers who flushed their hard-earned savings into the casino's bottom line. Remember, the house always wins. At the track, there's usually a reason a horse is a long shot. It doesn't run very fast, according to Jeffrey Bourne, who is a professor of finance at the D'Amore McKim School of Business in Northeastern University. Penny stocks are the long shots of the investment world. Doesn't mean they can't make money, but they're long shots for a reason. For every one that pays off really, really big, there are many, many more of them that do not, and many that may actually disappear very quickly. Instead of betting on the long shot or the underdog, you know, we constantly are telling you. I mean, the advisors, the hosts, the guests of the, certainly in this case, the hosts, Donna Allard, Steve Beauvais, and myself, we're certified financial planner professionals. That means that we are committed to providing guidance that is going to be of help to you. We are fiduciaries. We're here to make sure that you are investing in a diversified manner, well-capitalized, proven companies, members of major indices like the S&P 500, for example. It improves your odds dramatically. No penny stocks for us. You're no longer blindly playing slot machines here. If you manage to play the penny stock game and you've gotten out alive, count your lucky stars, God bless you, then run for the hills and never look back and do the prudent thing and continue to listen to the Money Talk program. We're here to help. We really are. Maybe we can give you some good advice and give you a good place to start and help you ask all those important questions. This is Money Talk. I'm Don Soa. Have a good day.